Welcome, True Believer readers, to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man, where we cover books that are a blast from Peter Parker's past. Today's books came out at the same time as the following three events. Mario Lemieux wins the NHL scoring title, stopping Gretzky's seven-year streak. Weird Al Yankovic's Fat, a parody of Michael Jackson's Bad, hits number 99. And John Mashqueta set record for fast-talking with 586 words per minute. Here to provide additional insight on these events is my friend Eddie and a special guest. Eddie, please introduce the guest.
Yes, once again joining us today is Kevin Ewing. But Kevin, this is kind of a special pod for you, isn't it?
It is. We're covering a very special issue that hits close to my heart, and we can talk about that later. As I've been on the show a few times before, I've mentioned in the past that I've kind of slowly but surely reading through a lot of Spider-Man comics, and recently I've read through all the Cloak and Dagger comics, and right now I'm on all the Morbius comics, where unfortunately I've hit his 1990s series, and it is some of the worst comics I have ever read.
Strong words from Kevin.
Well, we're not in the 1990s yet. We're getting close. We're still in the 80s. In fact, we're in 1988. I gave you three facts, guys, that took place during the same time that these books came out. Kevin, as our guest, do you want to talk about one of the three facts?
Mario Lemieux is probably my all-time favorite athlete. So over 20 seasons, with only three people winning the scoring title, it was the great Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, and then another Pittsburgh legend, Jaromir Jagr. So three people in over 20 years as a scoring title champion.
Wow. Wow, that's much more interesting than my pick, which is John Muschietti's 586 words per minute. I wasn't going to pick this guy until I realized it's the Micro Machine Man, right? From the commercials that I used to watch. I feel like I could come close to this record if I really tried to.
And another geek thing for him is, for those of you that have seen the Transformers animated movie, he was the voice of the Autobot Blur in that.
Yes! Kevin, this is why you're just such a great guest. One of my all-time favorites from when I was a kid. Kind of traumatized me, though.
Speaking of Transformers, which are a Marvel comic book, we're going to talk about a different Marvel comic book right now. And that comic is from April of 1988. Stanley presents Web of Spider-Man 37, When Strikes the Slasher, by James Owsley, pencils by Steve Geiger, and inks by Keith Williams.
Two detectives, Dakota North and her brother, Ricky North, are looking for the Slasher, a murderer slitting the throats of supermodels.
Yeah, the New York City police sergeant resents that the modeling firms pooled resources to bring in big-time detective Dakota North. We get extra character development that Dakota is estranged from her father. In these three books, she's one of the best characters we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I agree. And it was only mentioned briefly by the sergeant. Dakota was a model as she was growing up, and then became a PI. So that's kind of why she was hired for this particular case. And she debuted in a miniseries, but the first time I came across her was in some Daredevil comics from the 2000s. And I think she's been in Luke Cage and Black Panther comics as well. But overall, even though she's a great character, she doesn't have all that many appearances. And, you know, she herself hasn't been in the MCU, but someone from her original miniseries was. And if you've seen the She-Hulk Disney Plus show, there was a fashion designer on that show that Jennifer Walters used for their wardrobe so that she could be both Jennifer Walters and She-Hulk.
Right.
And it's that fashion designer that was taken from the original Dakota North miniseries.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's why Kevin's on the show.
Well, while at a fashion convention in New York City, Peter visits MJ to let her know he's headed out of town on a plum photog assignment that will allow him to pay his taxes. MJ tells him she already paid his taxes and would like him to attend her fashion expo, but understands his work is important. Peter, aghast at such ostentatious financial support from his wife, then thinks he might stay to keep MJ safe from the Slasher.
You know, we should all be so lucky to have a significant other that's a highly paid fashion model. But Peter being married to one sort of, you know, diminishes that everyman aspect that he's kind of famous for. And, you know, there's a huge online debate on whether Peter should even be married or not. And for those that are in the against it camp, I think this issue is kind of supporting of their case. And, you know, in a real world marriage, the couple would actually have spoken to each other about their finances and how they were going to pay their taxes. Here, the writer has to manufacture drama with the age old fiction trope of non-communication. And to double down on it, Peter eventually lies to MJ about flying to the assignment.
You know, I talked about this recently, how this non-traditional marriage, well, I rather enjoy it, the power dynamic here. But anyways, as Peter and MJ find compromise, we see MJ's colleague Elise Nelson fend off an exuberant fan, Harvey Finkelstein. Finkelstein concocts a plan to hire Leslie, an unemployed actor, to impersonate the slasher, and then, like a white knight, he will heroically save Elise, endearing her to Finkelstein.
Yeah, and Finkelstein, listeners, is a short businessman who, he's the kind of guy that would require probably a lot of money to attract the model, who is much taller than him as well. The actor he hires, though, is tall and muscular. This actor, Leslie, looks like he's one of the Kingpin's workout buddies, but Finkelstein has the money, and he's in charge of the plan.
Well, Finkelstein flubs the plan, and Peter almost catches Leslie. Despite the clear danger of impersonating a serial killer, Finkelstein and Leslie try the same plan a week later at the Fashion Expo. Leslie leads Spider-Man and Dakota on a wild chase, but is caught while the real slasher finally makes an appearance. It's MJ's colleague, Elise Nelson. Elise, mentally unstable and delusional, flips her razor blade open and prepares to slice MJ, but is stopped by Spider-Man.
I was fooled a lot. I thought they did an excellent job of misdirecting me in a few ways. They had this actor, Leslie, clipping serial killer articles and pasting them on the wall, and he was claiming he was researching the role. I'm like, oh my God, he's the actual serial killer. And Peter's spider sense went off when he bumped into Harvey Finkelstein, and I was like, oh my God, he's the serial killer. So I was completely fooled by this. Let's see if I can be fooled again in the next book. And that book is from May of 1988. Stanley presents Web of Spider-Man 38, Moving Up, written by Fabian
Nicieza,
penciled by Alex Saviuk, inks by Keith Williams and Mike Esposito.
The Hobgoblin is back and tossing pumpkin bombs all over the Kingpin's headquarters. When he finally gets the attention of the Arranger, he learns he's been blacklisted for being inept. The Arranger says if he eliminates Spider-Man, he might once again prove his worth. I'll remind the listeners that this iteration of the Hobgoblin is actually Jack-O-Lantern, a.k.a. Jason McIndale.
Great job so far with the summary, Eddie. I don't actually thank you enough for doing them all the time. Eddie, before we go any further, we have a special pre-recorded message I'd like to share.
Sounds good, James B.
Hey, Eddie and James B. Scott McElroy, a.k.a. Dr. Spidey here. As an uber Spider-Man fan, I've been listening to your show since almost day one, and I wanted to congratulate you on finally making it all the way to Web of Spider-Man number 38. I've listened to pretty much every Spider-Man Index show, and I can tell you that with your accelerated schedule, you guys are the only podcast to ever make it to Marvel Team-Up, let alone Web of Spider-Man, so that's a huge achievement that you should be commended for. Now, what makes Web 38 so special to me is that because of this comic, Drunk Pete was created, and because of Drunk Pete, I've been able to interact with other Spidey fans around the world and create genuine friendships with super cool people like Kevin, who I even met in real life last October at our Drunk Pete live get-together in Canada. So again, congrats on making it chronologically all the way to Web 38, and thanks for being the best Spidey podcast out there. May your webs never tangle. Bye.
Thank you, Scott, for all the great information. Meanwhile, a sizable house party is happening in Peter and MJ's apartment. Mrs. Muggins provides some comic relief while Peter is repeatedly flirted with by MJ's co-workers. He downs a torrent of MJ's tasty punch just before he gets a nervous call from Harry and Liz, informing him the Hobgoblin is mischief-making all over Manhattan. Although Peter is a little loopy, he swings into action, almost immediately finding the Hobgoblin.
This party scene in this throughout this issue is just my absolute favorite. You've got Joe Robbie Robertson. He's having the time of his life. Lance Bannon is being totally inappropriate with sexual innuendo when it comes to his camera. And as Eddie mentioned, Peter is getting hit on and being solicited, quite frankly, for an affair. When MJ's, you know, right next in the room next door, we have a guitarist for Alice Cooper that shows up to play music. It's just a rollickingly fun, good time. And did you guys happen to notice what song the band is playing?
No, I did not, Kevin. Tell me about it.
They are playing the 1967 Spider-Man theme song.
Oh, really?
Oh, one of the panels has a line from the song.
Oh, Kevin, great info as always. The two longtime adversaries, Hobgoblin and Spider-Man, immediately realize Spider-Man is drunk. Spidey is having a ton of trouble, but gets lucky when Hobby's glider and cybernetic control malfunctions from an electrical tower explosion.
The battle with Hobby and a drunk Spidey is an absolute delight. Spidey's aim is off, his speech is slurred, and I think, you know, a little bit of his New York accent comes to the forefront when he's drunk. It's just loads of fun. I do think it diminishes this version of the Hobgoblin, as, you know, he can't even take down an inebriated Spider-Man. And today, this is something that would never happen. Marvel would not allow this to happen. They make a point of Peter not drinking. And even though in this issue he does not voluntarily drink, there have been a couple instances where he has done so of his own free will, one of which you guys covered for the show. If you remember Marvel Team Up 75, he was in a bar that Luke Cage was in and he ordered a beer. And there were a couple other times as well, but now he's strictly non-alcoholic. So, Eddie, how does this one wrap up?
Peter returns to the party at his apartment and yells, "All right, who spiked the punch?" Mr. Muggins is to blame as Peter lightens up and rejoins the last party the couple will have in their Chelsea apartment.
Kevin, I appreciate you mentioning all the party guests, but we didn't talk about Spuds McKenzie. Eddie, do you know Spuds McKenzie?
I'm scared to say I do not, but I do not.
So Spuds McKenzie he's like the original party animal, and he was a Bud Light sponsor, we'll say. He was like the mascot for Bud Light. He actually became more popular than Bud Light, which is one of the reasons that they phased him out. The other reason they phased him out, I did know some Spuds McKenzie facts, but I tightened up before the podcast to make sure I had them all accurate. The dog was also like a cool little cute dog drinking beers, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, well, you can't have this because this dog is so cute. Kids are going to want to drink beer. So that was the big problem. So they were fighting that battle at the same time that Spuds was taking over being more popular than the beer. The Kevin Ewing level depth I wanted to share with you is that when Sir Mix-a-Lot wrote Baby Got Back, he was particularly annoyed at the Spuds McKenzie commercials with all the really skinny girls in the commercials. And he said there were more women with, you know, big backs like J-Lo. And he said, I'm going to write the opposite kind of song and make sure that I take care of these women. And he was the anti-Spuds McKenzie Baby Got Back song. So there.
Wow. Interesting.
Were we supposed to recognize Mr. Muggins in here? Have we seen him before? I feel a little ignorant and I haven't seen him, but I do love that he is the catalyst to like Peter experiencing his first drunkenness.
Yeah, did you discuss him in the summary?
Only at the very end that I said he is the one that spiked the punch.
Yeah, he was running around and Mamie's looking for him constantly and he's hanging out with all the candies, Bambies. Even though one of them is like his niece, right?
Perhaps, but he's ready to do the Charleston. That's what he says at one point. So
I'm sure he's picked the right one. I don't know which one they're related to. I just know I can tell them apart by hair color. So, and they all have, one has brown hair. I think one has blonde hair. One's a redhead. None of them have white hair. But speaking of some characters that have white hair, I think you'll see some in our next book. And that's from June of 1988. Stanley presents Web of Spider-Man 39, Petty Crimes, written again by Fabian...
It's Fabian Nicieza.
Written by Fabian Nicieza again, penciled by Alex Seviak, and inked again by Keith Williams.
A forlorn Nathan Lubinsky ponders what could have been with his ex-fiancée Aunt May. We get a recap of why and how May left him. A mysterious bum waits for Lubinsky to leave his condo, then rips the front door off and robs this place. When he goes to pawn Lubinsky's possessions, we learn it's a down-and-out Norton Fester. No prize for any listeners who remember who this is. It's been a while. Fester is unable to pawn Aunt May's engagement ring, but gets enough cash to head to the liquor store. In the Parker residence, Peter is sewing his tattered German spider suit. This is the red one, everyone. Peter must wear his red suit because MJ is too traumatized to see Peter in black due to her recent encounter with Venom in Amazing Spider-Man 300.
Speaking of which, can you guys imagine picking up this book instead of Amazing Spider-Man 300? Norton Fester he's no Venom.
Literally a hobo on the street as opposed to Venom. Okay.
Yeah, and I will tell you the value of the book is also about 300 times more valuable. So Norton and writer Fabian, how do you say this guy's name one more time, Kevin?
Fabian Nicieza.
Yeah. This guy doesn't even have this book listed in his Wikipedia credits. I jumped over to try to get the pronunciation of his name. I went through, I typed Spider-Man. It's just like, nah, he didn't write Spider-Man books. I'm like, what? Why? I doesn't even mention these books. These are the Drunk Pete books. What's going on here? Kevin, tell me what's going on.
Well, the reason why they don't mention Spider-Man is he's quite the accomplished comic book writer. For those that don't know, he's the co-creator of Deadpool, kind of a big deal character. He kind of gave the character his personality and humor. And he had a very famous run on X-Men that included the wedding of Scott Summers and Jean Grey. And to bring us back to the Drunk Pete theme for a second, he actually joined us on one of our anniversaries to tweet along with us, which was just absolutely a blast. Wow. And also just a great guy if you meet him in person too.
Wow, amazing info as always, Kevin. Well, let me finish this book off. When Aunt May hears about the break-in at Nathan's condo, she asks Peter to go check on him. Nathan vents to Peter about the depressing state of his body, mind, and soul, with the breaking point being May's engagement ring was stolen. With some spider sleuthing, Peter figures out Fester is to blame and eventually finds the bedraggled looter attempting to rob Aunt May. After some thrashing around, Spidey gives the looter a blow to the face and he cowers in fear before our hero and the police. Nathan finds the engagement ring and reconciles with Aunt May.
I'm still thinking about the fact you guys got to have this guy on your Drunk Peak Twitter stream. And you especially since it doesn't seem like his big book is Web of Spider-Man. It's Deadpool. So that's really nice that he came out and did that. Now, I, Eddie,
yes,
wasn't able to get him on our show.
Oh, yeah?
But I think you're going to be in for a real treat today.
Okay. Someone on par with the
Someone on par, finally. We've had some... You've been complaining a lot about the Daily Bugle section, but let me just get to our sponsor here, Kevin, for a moment. Listeners, it's time for our sponsor. The Daily Bugle presents Live with Eddie. Listeners, each week the Daily Bugle lets Eddie interview someone at the scene of one of these stories. Today, Eddie, please welcome Norton Fester to discuss his experience with Spider-Man. Wow. Take it away, Norton.
What?
Hello?
Norton, amazing to have you on the show. You fought Spider-Man on many occasions. This time didn't go so well, right? Any
of all the superheroes, why does Spider-Man always plague me?
I think he plagues quite a few different people, not just you. I don't think he's singling you out, Norton, but, you know, why are you so down on your luck lately? Is there anything we should know?
I only got $20 for the cufflinks to buy some liquor. I blew up, you know. Blew up! You ever blown up?
Would that be because you were ingesting too much of the meteors that you need, right? No? Correct?
I was fighting with Luke Cage and Spider-Man, and they literally blew me up. It's been miserable since then. I've been just drowning in my sorrows in a bottle full of liquor.
Well, I'm sorry, Norton. That is very sad. I feel like you could find some support or some help, you know, from someone or somewhere, other than robbing old men in wheelchairs of their very few valuables.
Well, I couldn't even sell the watch because it was inscribed. I couldn't sell the ring because it was too expensive. Marty wouldn't take it. I'm not famous for anything right now. Spider-Man's death would have been the turning point of my life. I could have been known as the man who crushed Spider-Man to death. But no, I'm sitting here on Live with Ernie trying to get $50 so I can buy myself out of my troubles.
Yes, that is Live with Eddie, to be clear. And also, had you not taken the watch and found something, maybe a better way to use your superpowers for good, perhaps?
Easy for you to say in your comfortable precious house with its oaken porch and your cable TVs and your AOL and all the other stuff you got going on. Not everybody has petty luxuries like you, Ernie.
All right. Well, Norton, I don't know if it was a pleasure to have you on, but you are a character who has tangled with Spider-Man many times before. I hope you find your way, Norton.
And I hope you'll stop taunting me like you taunt all your other guests, Eddie.
Do not taunt my other guests.
All right, thank you, Eddie. Thank you, Norton Fester. That's all the time we have for today. Remember to check out the Daily Bugle for even more news and firsthand accounts like this. You've been listening to The Daily Bugle Presents Live with Eddie. Great job on that, Eddie.
I did the best I could. Thank you, James B.
Yeah, I thought you did good with him. That guy there, that was a pricey get for us. But, Eddie, how can people reach us?
If you would like to email us to find out the price tag of Norton Fester, email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com. Or click on the link in this podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media.
And now it's time for Eddie's most interesting realization. Here's our special guest, Kevin Ewing.
The way to a woman's heart is to hire an actor, pretend he's a serial killer so that you can save her life. Goodbye.
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 I like how the most controversial part of these three books is that Peter Parker got drunk and not the hiring of someone to impersonate the serial killer. Twice, too. They were like, well, we didn't do it very well the first time. We'll try it again.